Live from the HananiahAutos.com studio, this is Jaguars Thursday.
Jaguars Thursday.
JP Shadrick, Jeff Loggeman, and Tony Baselli bring you the latest Jaguars news and what's happening around the NFL. Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Baptist Health, Ticket Exchange, and by Everbank.
Touchdown, Jacksonville!
Jaguars Thursday, driven with SunPass, begins right now.
Welcome into Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman, soon to be joined by Johnny O, is otherwise known as Johnny Ozone on Jaguars.com. I just want to let everybody know this. Fans, Jaguar fans that renew their season tickets by February 28th will be able to take advantage of loyalty pricing. You'll pay the same price you paid in 2016. Also, for the first time ever, the Jaguars are offering priority purchasing opportunities for concerts at Daly's Place. This in addition to great benefits like Teal Deals and exclusive events like Movie Night, Coaches Town Hall, and NFL Draft Parties. For more information, call 904-633-2000. Rolling along here on a Thursday night, one thing I wanted to make mention of, there's a lot going on this week. Certainly a lot has gone on with the Jaguars, with their coaching staff, and also the Super Bowl that's going to be coming up on Sunday. But, boy, am I excited for the weekend for Tony Baselli. I try to, I guess you could say, temper some of my comments about Tony Baselli because I don't want his ego in his head to get bigger than it already is. And we know that Tony sometimes can be a little big. And as a friend of his and a very good friend of his and a teammate of his, some of the comments I think that I make have been a little bit measured. But, I want to say this. I was looking at all the Hall of Fame finalists this week, and there are many great players on that list. But the ones that are already in the Hall of Fame that played in the era with Tony Baselli, and who I'm talking about specifically, Walter Jones, John Ogden, Willie Rofe, Orlando Pace, they are all in the Hall of Fame. And I played against every one of those guys. And I never played against Tony Baselli in a game setting, but I can tell you firsthand from going against him in a practice setting, he was the best of all of them, and it wasn't even close. And it showed. I mean, he was a great player to make the all-decades team of the 1990s, the NFL's all-decade team. Unbelievable accomplishment. But he is one of the most complete tackles that I have ever seen. From the day that I went against him in training camp when he was a raw rookie in 1995, it was immediate that you knew that he had something special. He had dynamic feet that could move like a 280-pound tackle from the early 90s, but he had a 325-pound frame that gave him the power to be the complete player. He was not a left tackle that had, I guess you could say, dancing shoes on without power. He was the most dominant blocking left tackle that I have ever seen. And trust me, I watched him because I was so intrigued by going against him in 1995 at Stevens Point back here in Jacksonville that I used to watch him. When I was on the sideline, I watched Tony Baselli. I watched him against the great players, all of them. Bruce Smith, going all the way to his first start ever against Green Bay. And he was unbelievable. And I think when I say about complete players, John Ogden, excellent player. Excellent player. But I just remember going against Tony in practice, and I remember saying to coach, I said, hey, I got to get reps on another guy. Because when I went against him, it took away all my confidence. So I really hope that he gets in, and I know that from reading some of the press clippings and some of the reports that are coming out of Houston for the Super Bowl, that he is gaining momentum, and I hope that he gets it. Because you know what? Sometimes the first opportunity is your best opportunity, and it would be also a proud moment for Jacksonville. It would be a proud moment for the Jacksonville Jaguars organization. And Tom Coughlin spoke about Tony Baselli this week, and here's what he had to say.
You're so proud about, I hope, Hall of Famer Tony Baselli, who is at the Super Bowl, who will be there on Saturday, I'm sure. But, when I think about Tony, reading what his peers said about him, I mean, it's incredible. Willie Rofe and Anthony Munoz, I remember Anthony, a USC guy, telling me from get-go, Tony Baselli is probably the greatest tackle that ever played on the left side. To read McGrary talk about going against him, to listen to the other coaches when they talk about Baselli, Marvin Lewis, And to read over Phil Simms's letter, which I thought was actually quite humorous as well. We're sitting there, and I mean, obviously, I didn't really expect it. And then when he asked me the question, he was expecting some dramatic, strategic, you know, we're gonna come over here and chip. We're gonna always slide to Derek Thomas. We're gonna do all these things. And when he asked me the question, I said, "What do you mean? What are we gonna do? We put Baselli on Derek Thomas, and we'll see where it goes." You know, and that's the way I felt from day one. Everybody knows the story about me going out to Southern Cal to work him out, but it's worth saying again because, you know, you're sitting here in a position where you've got the second pick in the draft in 95, and there's a lot of outstanding football players out there, and yet this is the cornerstone of your franchise. You have to make that decision. And you look at tape, and you look at tape, and you look at tape on a lot of different players, and then you say, you know what, I need to go and look this guy in the eye, and I need to work him out. I need to get that feel. So I go out there, and in comes this guy, 6'7", 327 pounds, There were probably five offensive line coaches there, and we go out on the field. I've never seen anybody with feet like this in my life. I mean, he danced, literally danced. He had a kid with him who was an offensive guard that played on the USC team, who was a good athlete in his own right, but it was amazing to watch the difference between Tony's feet and this guy's feet. And I remember looking at tape, and what was really impressive and how different it was is Tony would block a guy at the line of scrimmage on the run, and then you'd see him engaged like 7-8 yards downfield. And then he would put the guy on his back and he would gouge him. You know, he'd go down on top of him. But when you looked at that and you thought about the quality of the athlete, a very, very smart guy. We had dinner with he and Angie that night. And then we came in, of course, and drafted him. He gave me hell in the draft room, which it took you so long. Remember that story? But that was funny. And then the experience of going up to Stevens Point, having him dislocate his kneecap, boy, does that take your dauber down. You know, you got everything you can do to hang in there on a day like that. But to have him come back, and I remember we're playing the Packers, Brett Favre, that team was a very, very good football team. And I held him for a little bit in the first quarter, and then I said, go. And that was the last time I worried about anybody coming off that side. And that's a true story. But to think about this young man, the quality of the young man, what he's meant to his community, you know, certainly his athletic ability, his family, his children, Angie, his mom and dad, when you think about all of those things put together, this guy is definitely a Hall of Famer now. And remember the era in which he played, there were so many great tackles. And when I think of Tony, I think of Ogden. You know, I just do. Ogden went to UCLA. Tony goes to USC. You know all about that as well. But with the era of really, really outstanding tackles, and always to have his name mentioned in that group, you know, I mentioned Rolf, I mentioned Walter Jones, those guys. It's just a great tribute to him. Those guys are Hall of Famers. Baselli should be in the Hall of Fame.
And I think what he said right there at the very end were, those guys are Hall of Famers, Tony Baselli should be a Hall of Famer. And we now have us here on Jaguars Thursday joining us, General Manager Dave Caldwell. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks for having me. You guys kidnapped me from the hallway.
We did. We like to grab anybody that we can. Tony Baselli's opportunity this weekend for the Hall of Fame, truly exciting for him, but I think also for the organization as a whole.
Absolutely. I think Tony was the first pick in the organization, so hopefully he's the first person in the organization to go to the Hall of Fame, too. I think that would be something very unique, and it's well-deserving, obviously. And Tony's had a great career a little bit before my time. You know, I remember.
In 1995, what were you doing?
I was a junior in college.
Junior in college.
Yeah, I was a junior in college.
At the big football powerhouse?
John Carroll University.
That's cool. So to move a little bit away from Tony Baselli, a lot of people have been asking me throughout the last couple of weeks about the new organizational structure with Tom Coughlin coming in. For you personally, what's it been like?
It's been great. Working with Tom on a daily basis it's been really encouraging. He, Doug, and I, you know, a lot of meetings throughout the day, throughout the week, and really good insight and good vision from both he and Doug on how we're going to shape this team. And and what we're going to do moving forward. So it's been really good. Like I said before, the guy's got a wealth of knowledge. He's a future Hall of Famer, maybe the second Jaguar to go in the Hall of Fame, depending on how quickly Tony can get in there. And I think, you know, it's been truly a blessing.
With that change also comes, look, you got a job to do.
Sure.
And this time of year, you guys are typically involved very heavily in evaluating college prospects. Has that changed, or are you still right in the middle of that?
No, we're in the middle of it. We started on Monday, finishing up throughout the weekend and going into next week. And then now that Doug's completed the staff, we'll meet with our coach after we're done with our college meetings, because we have all the college scouts in from all over the country, and kind of ranking everybody at every position. And then we'll evaluate our team and do our end of season evaluations from our team with our coaching staff. See where everybody fits and where the coaches feel we should re-sign guys, where we should upgrade, and then we'll go into our free agency meetings for 2.5 weeks before the combine.
But before we get to the coaching staff, with this draft class, you've been studying them obviously since the draft ended last year, and then in some cases before.
Well, before, I always say it's about an 18-month process, so we're about, you know, about 14 months into the 18-month process right now.
Your early impressions of what will be the 2017 draft class as a whole?
You know, I think it's going to be good. I think it's a deep class, a lot of depth, you know, in terms of the top 10. You know, last year was a pretty good year for top 10 talent. I don't know if it'll match last year's group, but it'll be close. And then throughout the draft, you're going to find good players, especially along the defensive side of the ball and at the running back position.
With this draft, I know I've been reading you, and you just mentioned that defense is considered pretty strong. On the offensive side of the bar, is there another position group that stands out?
Well, I think running back and wide receiver, you know, there's a large volume of wide receivers that will make teams. There will be a large number of guys because there are so many that won't get drafted just by sheer numbers. And same with running back, too. So it'll be a good year to get some value later in the draft at those positions. And then there are some elite guys at the top of the draft, too.
As part of this evaluation process, you talked about that now that the coaching staff has been assembled. First of all, your thoughts on the staff that Doug Marone has assembled.
Well, Doug's done a great job, and he's been very calculated with putting the staff together, and very thorough in how he went about it, and very mindful in terms of the guys he brought in and making sure that we had a good position group. If we have two defensive line coaches, that they complement each other, two secondary coaches that they complement, or two offensive line coaches, making sure that they complement each other. And then really got a lot of experienced veteran coaches that have been with good teams, and also some veteran coaches that have been in college too.
Yeah, speaking of ones that have been in college, the defensive line coach, Marion Hobby.
Yeah.
Comes from Clemson.
Comes from Clemson and has put out a great product in his time there. And has been a coveted D-line coach, just wasn't ready to move for whatever reason. And fortunately, he picked up Doug's call this year, and I think Doug got him at a good time, maybe right after the national championship game, and he was ready to move.
No, that works out great sometimes. And in the secondary, Perry Fuel.
Yep.
No Perry. He was on the staff. Got to know him very well. He's got Super Bowl rings. Your impressions on what he will add to what Todd Walsh has as a base of knowledge already?
Well, very sharp, and obviously he's been an interim head coach. He's been a coordinator at a high level, and what Doug's done a nice job of is he's created bench strength all along the staff. On the defensive side of the ball, you have Todd Walsh, and then you have Perry Fuel that's been a coordinator. So, you know, hopefully we have success here, and maybe Todd goes on to be a head coach. And then on the offensive side of the ball, you have Nate Hackett. And then you had a guy like Scott Milanovic, who's capable of calling plays. You have a guy like Coach Price, who's capable of calling plays. And then young guys like Keenan McCardo and Tyrone Wheatley, who are up-and-comers and, you know, will eventually grow into those roles.
Tell me about Scott Milanovic. He was head coach of a CFL football team. But other than that, that's kind of all I know. That's all my base of knowledge on him.
He was a quarterback at Maryland, and then he played for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I believe he played behind their good friend Trent Dilfer at Maryland. And
our good friend.
Yeah.
I like that term. That's good.
Friend of the Jaguars, obviously. and then after that, he went into you know, coaching World League and then CFL, and had great reputation and has great success wherever he's been.
Very important position that he's going to be coaching.
Very important.
Quarterbacks.
Very important, yeah.
And great experience having played the position and obviously an offensive background, right?
Yeah, I think that for a coach that's played that position is critical. And to offer some insight to Blake, being a former player at the highest level, at the NFL level, and I think is very, very important. And I think he's going to have a really good demeanor about him. And I think you're going to see a coach that's going to be on top of the details.
All right, so Sunday's a big game. Super yep. Bowl is going to be played with an organization that you spent time with. Your thoughts on what's going to happen?
You know, I go back and forth, and I've talked to quite a few people in the organization over the last couple weeks. And, you know, it's going to be a heck of a game. It's going to be a chess match. You know, and I hope it's close, but I'd love to see Atlanta win. And obviously got some good ties there and some great people. And same with New England. I have some great people there, but I think – you know, I think maybe it's time for
a change.
For a change, and you know, so.
So, of all the people that you worked with the Atlanta Falcons, you know, you have always at any place you go, you always have great relationships. So you always have one person or two people that really stick into your mind to where you're rooting for them. With the Atlanta Falcons, is it Thomas Dimitroff?
It's well, there's multiple. I tell you what, Thomas Dimitroff, Phil Emery, who was on our scouting staff, who then went to be a general manager with the Chicago Bears, the whole scouting staff there, the director of college scouting, Steve Sabo, great guy, and they run a great scout college scouting department. You know, the assistants, Thomas's, you know, his administrative assistant and computer guys, and it's a great organization, really good people, and I think it's a great time for them. I hope they enjoy it.
All right, Sunday rolls around, kickoff starts. Where will you be at to watch the game?
I will be on my couch.
You and me both.
With my dogs, my son, and my in-laws are in town coming today, and so I think we'll have a pretty low-key night and enjoy the game.
All right, Dave, we'll let you get back to the scouting meetings. Thank you for taking some time to spend with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
General Manager Dave Caldwell, folks. We've got plenty more segments, including Johnny Ozone, John Osher of Jaguars.com, right here on Jaguars Thursday. And Jaguars Thursday is brought to you by Beards Jewelry at the St. John's Town Center, where exceptional is affordable. Jeff Loggeman in studio, along with Johnny Osher, is going to be joining us from Houston via the 1010XL hookup, I guess you could say. Thank you to General Manager Dave Caldwell for spending some time with us, joining us here in studio to get a couple comments from him about Tom Coughlin as well as the upcoming 2017 draft and the completion of the Jaguars coaching staff. But now let's turn our attention to Houston and Johnny Ozone of Jaguars.com fame. John Osher, what's up?
Good. Can you hear me?
Can hear you loud and clear.
Okay, good. Hey. All right, Jeff, I want to ask you a question.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I'm worn out on talking about Tony Boselli this week. I mean, it's killing me out here.
Wait a minute. Don't be worn out yet, because I wanted to talk about him a little bit.
Well, that's fine. I know. I was kidding. But I would like to hear, and you told me off the air, and I'm sure you talked about it on the air, tell me about the first practice against Tony.
Well, let me say this, John, that at the very beginning of the show, I said
to you. You already talked about it.
I didn't talk about the first practice, okay. But I remember you know, many times I've had the opportunity to sing Tony's praises, and I have, but I've never gone in depth. You know, you don't want Tony getting a big head, which we know that happens.
Well, it's too late, Jeff. I mean, it's
so I brought up the point that, look, you know, you look at the Hall of Fame left tackles that are in that played in the same era: Walter Jones, John Ogden, Willie Rofe, Orlando Pace. Now, Walter Jones was a complete player, excellent against the run, very strong. Willie Rofe, I thought I always could have pretty good success against him because he wasn't as long. Orlando Pace, right. I thought, was a very good player, but I was never worried about going against him. John Ogden, I was confused when I went against him because he was so long, but I never feared him as a run blocker.
Right.
The one that I respected the most, which was the guy that I went against in practice every day, and not only because I went against him in practice, but during the games – very few times in my NFL career until I got to Jacksonville, what I watched the offense play from the sideline. But I wanted to watch, especially that first year, I wanted to watch Tony Boselli play. And against that, in that first game against the Green Bay Packers, when he had an opportunity to go against Sean Jones, because I had an idea that he was going to beat Sean Jones up, because he beat me up in practice. The first practice, though, that I went against Tony in pads, I just came away so impressed with his feet, his technique, and his smarts, because he knew what you wanted to do. He knew you as a player, and so he would want to take away what you did best. For me, I used to knock hands down, so he would hide his hands. And I'm going, this is a rookie. How does he know, you know, to do those kind of things? Because a lot of times it takes a couple years for a player to gain that knowledge and understanding. But right out of the gate, Tony knew. You know, he adapted
and
picked up quickly.
And it may be the time has blurred my memory of it, but I can recall you minicamp talking to me in Prisco. It may have been Pete. Tell me about a conversation with you afterward. But it seemed to me like you knew from day one, without pads, minicamp, this guy's the real deal and just different.
Well, and the biggest reason why, you know, all offseason we worked out. You know, we had all the voluntary, mandatory workouts. And to watch how he could run as a big guy, which he would run with the defensive lineman. He would outrun every offensive lineman on the team, maybe with the exception of Jeff Novak, who was pretty athletic.
Sure.
But, I mean, just his grace, his ability to stay balanced all the time, and his feet were just unparalleled in the National Football League. And the thing that he always had was he had a little bit of a dog in him. When I say a little bit of a dog in him, that he was never happy. If he could block a guy and just kind of wall him off, it was never good enough. He always wanted to take it a little bit further and drive the guy off the ball and into the ground if he could do it in any given play. And he had that attitude. He had that nastiness. And there's a lot of left tackles in the game that don't play that way. But he played that game that way.
Yeah, I always said, Jeff, people in Indy when I first got up there, Peyton always wanted to know about players and whatnot. And I told him, I said, he's one of these guys who he was put on this earth to play left tackle. Mm-hmm. Everything in his mentality, his build, his feet, his body, he had leverage. I told Pete Prisco the story today. I remember walking out to practice at times, Jeff, and I would see Tony from way, way on the other side of the field. And the thing that struck you was at 6'7", 325, he looked absolutely proportioned, and he wasn't top-heavy like some offensive linemen. He wasn't overweight. I mean, his body, and he was put on this earth to play the position that he played.
Yeah, and great player. Great player. But let me ask you this. Honestly, what do you think his chances are of getting elected into the Hall of Fame on Saturday?
On Saturday, the best thing I've heard from people is generally – the thought amongst the voters, and there's a lot of them that are really, really in his corner. Peter King's in his corner, Sal Palantonio, Rick Goslin, some guys who, I don't know if all fans know all these guys or not, but they're guys who, when you're talking to Hall of Fame voters, these are the guys that the younger voters sort of listen to. They can sway the room. They think it's about 50-50 for Tony this year. It's tough to make it your first time in that 15. I think he's going to make that top 10, Jeff. And the top 10, once you get in there, your odds are very high for getting in later on. I don't know if it'll be this year simply because the first time thing, but there's a much better chance than I would have said 2 years ago. I think he's got a shot. And the vibe that I get from talking to the John Claytons of the world, the Rick Goslins, Peter King, is that he's going to get in. If it's not this year, it's going to be soon.
Well, and
that's a big change from a couple of years ago.
Well, the list
there was not
that
kind of momentum for him a couple of years ago.
The list of names that I talked about: Walter Jones, John Ogden, Willie Rofe, Orlando Pace. Look, I know that Tony didn't have the longevity that some of those guys had. John Ogden was an exceptional player. Having gone against him, I mean, he was the one guy that literally, John, I didn't know what to do. All I knew to do against John Ogden was to play hard. And to hope that somehow, some way, that he would trip up. But I can say without a doubt, Orlando Pace and Willie Rofe and Walter Jones went against those guys, they are not Tony Boselli. They're not in his class. I mean, wait a minute. They're not at his level. They're in his class. Right. They're not at his level.
And I think that's helping, Jeff. And, I mean, if people who've listened to the show have heard me talk all week, they probably heard this before. But I thought that when he got in the 15 finalists, meaning Tony, in January for the first time, that's really the first time that all these 48 Hall voters really start looking at a guy's career. And it's the first time that they start making calls, meaning, you know, say you're the beat guy for the Kansas City Chiefs, and maybe you're a younger guy who didn't see Tony. Well, now this guy, because Tony, because he needs to vote for these guys, he's going to be making calls. He's going to be talking to some of the older scouts or maybe a player who played against Tony. And that will help Tony. It doesn't help everybody who gets in the room. But the consensus from talking to people here is when you mention the names Rofe, Jones, Ogden, Pace, everybody immediately goes, and Tony was clearly as good as any of those guys, probably better. Well, you're not hearing as much out here about the longevity thing as you are that phrase that I just said. Now, the longevity is still why he's not in yet. He would have walked in had he played longer. But you're starting to get the idea that the consensus is, you know what, this guy was as good as anybody and maybe better in the golden era of the position. At some point, that's going to become the storyline that I think is going to get him in.
All right, so the list of finalists, I'm going to read them out here. Contributors, you got Jerry Jones and Paul Tagliabue. You got Boselli, Jason Taylor, John Lynch, Morton Anderson, Isaac Bruce, Don Coryell, Terrell Davis, Brian Dawkins, Alan Faneca, Joe Jacoby, Ty Law, Kevin Mawai, Terrell Owens, LaDainian Tomlinson, and Kurt Warner. In my mind, Tomlinson is a lock.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the vibe that you get out here.
Okay.
Is that if you there's not really a lock like a Favre lock. I mean, there are guys, so the story goes, you know, I think most people know what the process is. A presenter stands up and talks for a guy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sam Kavaras will be talking for Tony Boselli on Saturday. Well, with a guy like Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Brett Favre, the presenter just stands up and says, hey, Brett Favre. And they don't waste the time making a presentation. He's obviously a walk-in. There's not really a guy like that in this class, but LT comes the closest.
Okay, and if you had to let's say that Boselli's at 50-50. Give me your top candidates out of that group that you think will be in.
My guess is I think this is the year T.O. is going to get in. He was out last year because a lot of people were concerned about the fact that he had been released in his prime by contending teams. And that's the big thing in the room that hurts T.O. You know, if you're in your prime and you're a core player, why are you getting released? But I think his numbers will push him past that. And it feels like Warner's going to get in this year. And those are sort of the three that I think people would be surprised if they don't. It sounds like the offensive line is going to come down between Boselli and Jacoby, and that there's a big push for Jacoby because it's his last year of eligibility. Sometimes that starts swaying the room. I don't think it should, but it's how it is. But, Jeff, you know, nobody was a bigger Skins fan from 83 to 92 than I was.
Or me.
That was when Jacoby played.
Or me. I mean, even though that part overlapped with my playing career. But, I mean, I watched Joe Jacoby.
But you saw the beginning of it. Joe Jacoby wasn't Tony Boselli.
No, it's not even close.
I love the Hogs. I had a hog nose, for goodness sake. But he wasn't Tony Boselli.
No, not even close.
So, but anyway, that may be what happened. And then, you know, there's each faction. I mean, I know the people who watched Kevin Mawai play are just as passionate about Kevin Mawai's chances as Tony Boselli. So it's every market.
John, I watched Kevin Mawai, and I thought he was a really good player, solid player that had a long career. But he was never in the category of a Boselli where he was considered elite.
Yeah,
like,
the thing,
like, you know, where you went, oh, my God, this guy can do things nobody's ever done before.
Right, and that's the thing that jumps out at you about Tony, that maybe the listeners who saw him play and hear you, me, and Shadrick kind of joke with him and everything, it's easy to forget. There are people who are respected people who think that this guy might have been the best ever to play the position. Now, that's a big reach. You can't really prove it. But Munoz, who most people think is the best player to play position, certainly puts Tony in his category. and there are people who think that he's that kind of ability. You don't hear that about some of the other names in this class. So what you hope is that those kind of things stand out in the voter's mind and they say, you know what, 7 years, 8 years, whatever, when this guy was right, he was as good as anybody who ever played.
I think you're dead on the money. And, John, we're going to stop talking about Tony Boselli. Let's take a break when we come back.
Yeah, I'm worn out on it at this point.
We'll talk about the completed Jaguars coaching staff right here on Jaguars Thursday with me, Jeff Loggeman, and Johnny O. John O. Fans that renew their season tickets by February 28th will be able to take advantage of loyalty pricing. You'll pay the same price you paid in 2016. Also, for the first time ever, the Jaguars are offering priority purchasing opportunities for concerts at Daly's Place. This in addition to great benefits like teal deals and exclusive events like movie night, coaches town hall, and NFL draft parties. For more information, call 904-633-2000. Welcome back to Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman in studio, joined by John Osher, who is in Houston at the Super Bowl. And Johnny, this week the Jaguars announced that the coaching staff is finalized. Doug Marrone has gotten everybody in place that he wants to have. I think the first comment that I would have on it is that the number of coaches has significantly dropped than it was under Gus Bradley.
Yeah, no question. I mean, you know, you obviously got the same number of, you know, frontline position coaches, for lack of a better word, and coordinators and special teams guys. But there aren't nearly as many assistant to the assistants as there were before. I haven't counted up. It seems like about maybe seven or eight less. And I'm curious to know from you, Jeff, you know, I think that's probably a positive thing. Maybe it's a little more, I don't know, focused. I don't know that you need 27 or 28 coaches, but, you know, you played, I didn't. Is my perception right?
No, I think it is. I think a lot of times as a player, when you have so many different voices in your ear, it kind of gets old as a player.
Right.
I mean, you want to talk to one guy and one guy only. You don't want to talk to the position coach that you have, and then his assistant, and then another assistant. I mean, you want to talk to the guy.
And that kind of became a thing. I remember when I was in Indy from, 2001 to 2011, about, 04, 05, I started looking at different media guides, and all of a sudden all these teams had assistant defensive line, assistant linebacker. You know, and at some point you would see some guy coaching, two players. And it always felt to me like maybe it just got to be a thing where, okay, this other team does it. We're going to go ahead and do it. And, cut it back down, get an assistant for each job, and then maybe have a couple of assistants that are quality control and, go coach, go do it.
Well, let's take a look at the offensive staff. One of the last positions that was filled was quarterback's coach Scott Milanovic, who comes from the CFL, has obviously played the position. What have you heard about him as a coach, and more specifically about his ability to coach quarterbacks?
Yeah, probably not much more than you. I do know from his time in Toronto, he was a head coach and pretty well respected, and then Toronto, I guess, had just kind of turned into a bad situation where the GM left. I've only read a little bit about it, but there were some issues with the franchise that he didn't like, and sort of felt like it was time to get out. But he seemed like a pretty well-respected guy. I'm never sure how to judge a coach coming in, Jeff. I think so much of it is, do you click with the guy? Does the player that you're coaching believe in you? And then I've always thought, if they do, then you're halfway there. And most coaches, if they get to the NFL, can coach. They can coach the position. If they can reach that player, if Blake Bortles believes in this guy, then I think he'll probably be fine. And, I'm sure there's more to it than that, but I think that's a big part of it. And I'm willing to give the guy a shot. I don't know what his resume says about quarterbacks having coached in the NFL, but somebody sees something in him. And that's about all I got with him, because I don't know what his record is with NFL quarterbacks, because he really doesn't have one. He hasn't been around it since he quit playing. But somebody sees something in him.
Well, the one guy that we certainly know a lot about is wide receivers coach Keenan McCardell. I'm very excited that this organization, this is the first former Jaguars player to be on the coaching staff. Is that not right?
That's right. Yeah, I want to say maybe Marlon McCree was on a couple
that's
of years
right.
back.
That's right.
That's the one that stands out to me. I wasn't here for the 10 years I wasn't here, so there may have been one or two, but certainly he's the first one of prominence from that golden era. And I don't know how much all that matters, but, you know, I was around Keenan and so were you. I always could envision him coaching. Knowing Keenan, he probably thinks he should still be playing. He could probably catch a couple touchdowns for you because he had that kind of confidence. But, you know, he cared about the game, and he worked his way into being a great player. He was not a great player when he came in, and he made it last for 17 years. So it sort of feels right having him on staff, doesn't it, Jeff?
It does.
That's kind of what I'm getting at.
And, you know, I think the one thing about Keenan, you know, because you know, I don't have any experiences with Keenan as a coach, but as a player, Keenan was never the fastest. Keenan was never the most athletic. Keenan was a guy that was a smart player because he was able to have and understand all the little nuances about playing the position.
Right.
And I think that that's important to be able to pass those down, and I'm sure that Keenan has expanded his base of knowledge. He had a stint with the Redskins at the University of Maryland. So it's not like he was just idle, you know, after his playing days and was doing nothing, and this is going to be his first, you know, opportunity of coaching. So I think having great experience and then also the ability to educate and to teach, I think is a strong point with Keenan, because, you know, that's the one thing I've always was impressed with Keenan, a very smart player. And I think that that will help him well here in this position.
Yeah, I'm not sure how much this has to do with coaching, but it feels like there's something there. There's always a handful of guys in every locker room as a reporter that you can go to, and, you know, especially when I was covering you guys, you taught me a lot about the pro game, Jeff. In 95, I was coming from college, and you were good enough to sort of explain certain things. I could ask you a question about defense or about pass rush, and, you know, you could explain it in a way that was very understandable. Keenan was sort of that same guy in a way. You could talk to Keenan about football. He knew the league. He could tell you, hey, you know, I was running this route for this reason. This move helped me get open. He was able to enunciate very well. I always thought that you could have coached if you wanted to. So there's something about that ability to translate what's in your head and what you know you can do physically to be able to make somebody else understand it. And Keenan certainly fits into that category for me.
Well, it's the ability to communicate. And
right.
Keenan can communicate, and that's a big part of education. The one.
Is there anything, Jeff, to, you know, there are now two pretty accomplished players, ex-players who these guys would have heard of, meaning Tyrone Wheatley and Keenan, on the staff. Is it good to have that mix? Some people think you ought to have a couple of ex-players that it just helps somehow on the coaching staff.
Well, I think from the very get-go, as a player, when you're being taught by somebody who played the game, I think it gives the coach credibility from the very first words out of his mouth. But then after that point, you know, that credibility and trust has to continue to be earned.
It better work, what he's saying.
Absolutely. So he's got to be able – if you can show, and whether you played or not, as long as you can show that you can help an individual get better, then the respect is given to the coach. It doesn't matter if he
played the game. The ex-player thing goes away pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, but it certainly helps with the initial words. And look, and there's a lot of experiences. You know, look, when I was in New York, I remember my defensive line coach, Greg Robinson, who was an excellent coach. You know, but I look back on the early years, and he was trying to teach me certain things that just didn't work. You know, but there were some things that he did teach me that did work. You know, so there was, you know, because, you know, he didn't play defensive line. You know,
right.
he never played the position, so how in the world can he teach me? I didn't have that, that block in my mind towards him. But, you know, certainly after, you know, years of being in the league and learning to play the position, because I'd never played the position at that time, you know, after learning some of the things on my own and watching guys and coming up with some of your own thoughts, there were a lot of things that I thought that he could have taught me early on that he just didn't know,
right.
You know, because he didn't do it.
Well, I forget when I talked to Keenan. It may have been one of the alumni games when they came back, but talked to him very briefly on the sidelines, and it was when A-Rob and Hearns were already here. And I think both Jimmy and Keenan have talked positively about those two guys. But in talking to Keenan on the sidelines, it seemed to me that he truly does think this receiving core especially those two guys. Those guys were hot the year that I talked to him. I think he believes in these guys, and I think he thinks there's some talent in this bunch that he can help.
And
which, you know, stats show there is, but it was a little bit of a drop-off last year.
Well, and now you got three. You know, Keenan really comment too much on Marquise Lee, and now after the year he had, he's also in the mix. All right, Johnny, let's take a break. We come back. I want to get some of your thoughts on some things that have happened around the National Football League and also the Super Bowl right here on Jaguars Thursday.
Welcome back to the HananiahAutos.com studio. Jaguars Thursday continues right now.
Welcome back to Jaguars Thursday. Jeff Loggeman in studio. John Osher joining us via the 1010XL headsets there in Houston at the Super Bowl. And Johnny, how much longer are you going to be in Houston for?
We will be here through Saturday night, leaving Sunday morning. As we talked about earlier, the big reason we're here, we're covering some Radio Row stuff. I was fortunate to talk to Drew Brees yesterday about Doug Marrone. So there's some elements of our coverage like that. But we're here to chronicle, Tony's, I'm going to call it a quest, but the Hall of Fame. The voting's Saturday, so we'll head out Sunday morning.
Well, then I hope you have a great time while you're there because Super Bowl is truly a unique event.
I haven't been to one since I covered both Colts Super Bowls when Peyton was there, so 06 and 09. Haven't been back, and it's in 8 years, and unsurprisingly, it's 8 years bigger than it was. It grows every year, and I'm sitting on Radio Row now, and, you know, it's just a completely different world than when I started covering these things in 96.
All right. Well, Johnny, let's take a little view around the National Football League, and let's start where a place that you have spent a good piece of your life, Indianapolis. Pat McAfee, the Colts punter, retires, and he's going to be joining Barstool Sports, which, by the way, was banned at the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
What the hell is he doing?
Well, Pat's a different guy. I only covered Pat, I want to say it was 2 years. He's an 8-year veteran. Yeah, that adds up. I was there when he first walked into the interview room 4 or 5 days after he was drafted, and he's a different cat now. He's a good dude, a good punter, sort of has always had – I think he's got a talk radio show in Indianapolis now. He's a funny guy. I haven't really seen his stuff, but he does some stand-up. This is what he wants to do for his career. He wants to be in media. He wants to do this. And I read – because I knew Pat, I read with interest some of the stories after he announced retirement last night. And I guess this is something he's been thinking about for a while. He's had a couple of surgeries the last couple of years. So I guess he got the opportunity now and decided this was the time was right. But I was surprised and I wasn't because he was playing at a high level last year.
He's one of the best punters in the National Football League.
Yeah, but he's very much – he marches to his own drum. And, once I thought about it – again, I don't pretend to know him, but I knew him for a couple of years and doesn't – shock me the way it would some other players.
No, and it's that's actually great news for Jaguar fans. I mean, he's one of the best punters in the league, and also he takes the pressure off of Adam Vinatieri because he handles kickoffs. You know,
yeah.
I mean, can you imagine what Adam Vinatieri's thoughts are now? My holder's gone. The guy that handles kickoff that allows me to just do field goals and continue on a Hall of Fame career.
Yeah. His other thought is, I'll probably keep kicking until I'm 60 because I guess he's going to be able to.
He might. In other news around the National Football League, John Lynch named general manager of the San Francisco 49ers from the broadcast booth to running the ship in San Francisco. Your thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing everybody's going to jump on is the Matt Millen correlation. I mean, that's the high-profile one that didn't work when Matt went out of the broadcast booth and into the Lions. The one thing I always say when people ask me that, well, why did the Jaguars do this or why did this team do this? There's no formula for this thing because there's 32 owners, there's 32 groups who think that they're figuring out the answer. So when something like this happens, it doesn't shock me. Ozzie Newsome has been a great GM, ex-player. There's been ex-players who have done it. the ex-broadcasting route. You know, it's worked in other sports, Jeff, so I don't know why it's never worked in the NFL. John's an intelligent guy. No reason at its surface why it shouldn't work, except that it's so unorthodox that it does make you raise eyebrows and say, ah, boy, that'd be a tough one. I mean, if you're a fan, it does raise your eyebrows. But, you know, there's so few situations that do strike gold, Jeff, that I'm never surprised when one of them works because it's just a matter of everything coming together.
Well, it's amazing because, you know, how the naming of John Lynch as the GM in San Francisco is viewed, because a lot of people, their first initial reaction is, are you kidding me? A guy that
right.
never had any experience? Well, look, teams around the league are supposedly clamoring for Peyton Manning to come in and run their organization.
Right. Yeah, and some of that, in Elway raised some eyebrows when he went to Denver, and, you know, all of a sudden that's the model. So you think, okay, well, Peyton can come do it. I guess, to your point, if John Elway and Peyton Manning can do it, why not John Lynch? So, you know, it's so rare to have a situation that is just firing on all cylinders, and it's so rare to have it work. Ozzie Newsome, for example, it's rare to have the kind of career that guy's had. I think anybody would have predicted when he got that job that he would have been in it for, 20 years now with
yeah,
the sustained
amazing
success.
Career.
So, you know, if John Lynch is the right guy, it'll work. If he's not, it's not. I don't see why John Elway should work and John Lynch wouldn't. So we'll see.
Well, I'm rooting for him because he's a great guy. I got a lot of respect for John
Lynch. You're rooting for him because you think you're going to be running the Jaguars 5 years if it works.
Yeah, man. No, I don't
think you
think
you're getting that job next.
No, John, I'm good right where I am. Hey, we only got about a minute and a half left. The Super Bowl coming up. What are your thoughts on the game?
Well, being here, there's a lot more people who think the Falcons have a good shot than what I would have thought had I not been here. On paper, talent-wise, everything points to the Falcons. They're playing well. Their offense is running great. But at some point, the Patriots figure out a way to win these games. And, you know, the only time it hasn't happened is when Tom Coughlin was coaching the Giants and they had that pass rush. If you can't get to Brady, I think you're going to beat him. And I think the Patriots will win because I don't think they'll be able to get to Brady at the end of the game when it matters.
I'm with you too, Johnny O. Hey, Johnny, thanks for spending the time with us this evening, buddy.
Jeff, I enjoyed it, buddy. We'll see you.
Safe travels back from Houston. And we'll talk to everybody next week right here on Jaguars Thursday.